Brigitte has told you something of what we found on identities, values and attitudes and behaviour. What I'd like to present is some findings from studies focused specifically on identities. David mentioned earlier that we'd done some early work on meat consumption and resistance to change and identity threat. And we follow that up by focusing on transport. Now, I guess the reasons for focusing on transport in the context of sustainability is very obvious. We know from Tim Jackson and Anita Druckmann's work in Resolve of the importance of emissions from private car use in terms of the overall national quota of emissions. And we also know that still nationally 70% of us drive to work, and that about 43% of primary school children are driven to school. So the reasons for looking at transport is, as far as sustainability, is reasonably clear. And of course a lot of work has already gone on why people choose to travel as they do. The obvious instrumental factors are typically referred to, and people will talk when they're asked to explain their travel mode choice. They'll often talk about the perceived cost, convenience, time and so on. We know as well that the context that people make those choices in also influences people. So the availability of public transport infrastructure, for example, and urban form, and particularly safety on walking routes to school for children, is part of parental decisions about that. And we know as well that habit is a factor. We know that each one of us, we make a journey, we don't once again make a new decision for how we might travel. We tend to have habitual travel models. But we also know that there's more going on when people are putting together the complex factors that contribute to their travel mode choice. We know that even when more sustainable offerings are there that are cheaper, quicker and more convenient, such as a carpool lane, they won't necessarily be used. And we know as well that there are individual differences, that even people in very similar contexts, environmental contexts, can make different decisions. On the Bar Energy project, to which Resolve contributed, there was a finding that people's political orientation had a bearing on how they chose to travel. So the people who were more likely to say they were more left in their political orientation were also more likely to take public transport. And thinking about different decisions in similar circumstances, if you take a typical classroom in England of 30 children, statistically, 24 of those children will live within a mile of the school, and 13 of those children will be driven to school. So similar circumstances, but different things going on for people. So we wanted to explore some of those additional factors. And we chose to focus on identity because there is a lot of work that has already established some links between how you choose to travel, in particular our use of the car, and identity. Even anecdotally, the relationship between status and prestige and the car you drive is pretty self-evident. And there's evidence as well on, say, customization of cars by young men as a way of expressing identity. So there's quite a lot of discussion and consideration already for the linkages between the use of the car and identities. And that discussion links with work in other areas. Brigitte has mentioned some of it. Where we've seen empirically that there are relationships between the identities that people hold and how they choose to behave. And these research studies range from blood donation to motherhood, but also into the sustainability arena, where evidence of recycling identities that have been mentioned already, the more somebody sees themselves as a recycler, the more likely they are to actually enact that behaviour. And green consumerism is another where there's research studies showing that link. But we feel that we felt that the work that has gone on has been very, very useful in linking the use of the car in particular and identity, but that there was more scope for applying psychological theory to that. A lot of the work that had existed, that has been done already, hasn't really used established frameworks of identity in psychology. And, of course, using a strong theory not alone allows us to explain some behaviours better, but it allows us potentially to predict behaviours. It allows us more insight into who, when, why, and what conditions people might behave in particular ways. So we decided to use a particular approach to identity called identity process theory. And the reasons for that were particularly because it has a lot to say, we believe, on resistance to change. resistance to change was part of the objectives of the result at the outset of trying to understand more about why people are inclined to say they are prepared to behave environmentally but don't follow it up in action, and seeing set in ways that are showing resistance. The identity process theory is particularly good, we felt, in trying to unpick some of the mechanisms that might underlie that. So I just want to briefly outline some of the things, theories that particular theory says that might help us to understand more about what's going on in resistance to change. So identity process theory is a very comprehensive framework of trying to explain what it is we're talking about when we talk about self-identity. And it, when we talk about self-identity, we're talking about who I see myself as being. And the theory explains how that might come about, how in social interactions that develops and how it develops over time. And it's a particularly useful framework because it talks about identity not as a construct, but as a bounded thing that we carry around with us, but as a set of processes that are constantly reacting to our environment, our context, our social interactions. So, in addition to explaining a lot about the processes that go on, it talks in particular about threat and threat to identity. Now, the self is very core to an individual's experience. So how we see ourselves guides not only how we perceive interactions with us, how we think others view us, but also how we view others, our feelings, our thoughts, our behaviours, all link back to a core sense of who we are. And because it's core to our experience, it's then very important that it's maintained as an integrated whole, a coherent whole. So anything that might threaten that identity is something that is generally experienced as distressing, something to be avoided, something to be protected against. And identity process theory expands on some of the processes that relate to trying to protect itself. And very briefly, those processes can be seen as either deflection or acceptance processes. So the theory is suggesting that in order to protect the self from threat, there are ways, psychological mechanisms, which get triggered in order to stop that happening. And deflection processes can mean that there can be denial of the threat, there can be reconstrual of the threat, and there are other ways that we can try and keep that threat away to maintain the coherence of the self, to protect itself. And there are also acceptance mechanisms as well, in which case, where the identity can actually change in the direction of the threat to undermine the effect of the threat. So we felt that these theoretical explanations had a lot to say about why there might be resistance and why identity threat might be part of resistance in people's approach to sustaining their behaviours. So armed with a good strong theory, we set out to do our research, and we decided to focus on regular travel, where people are more likely to have perhaps more choices and more likely to, as regular behaviour, possibly more likely to be influenced by identity. The two studies we did were, first of all, looking at trying to establish an empirical link between identities and travel mode choice, because there's a gap in the literature, other sustainable behaviours had shown that link, we wanted to show it. And secondly, then, we wanted to explore this prediction from the theory of could identity threat be part of explaining how people might be resistant to get out of cars and try to take more sustainable means of transport. So our first study, we did this in across the UK, and with quite a good number of working parents. We also ensured that the income was above the median, ensured that they lived in urban settings, urban suburban, to try and ensure they had the potential for some choices in their travel mode. And we measured how they saw themselves when it came to how they travelled, and we measured how they typically travelled on their routes to work, to school, and other regular travel. And our findings were, in support of what we expected mainly, we found that we could show a relationship between identities and particular forms of journey. Interestingly, we didn't get a relationship for escort education or the ski run, and I can suggest reasons for that later stage. But we did find the main support for what our main hypothesis, which was that identities might relate to people's choice of travel on regular journeys and commuting to work on specific journey types. And the identities that we found that did relate included not only an identity as a public transport user or as a driver, but also more social identities, including workman and parent. They emerged from people's descriptions of themselves on how they travelled. So our second study then wanted to, using this link, try and explore what might happen to an identity that was threatened in circumstances relating to travel. And we set up this study as a vignette study, where a vignette was a short scenario describing a transport-related situation. And in the scenarios we tried, in the threat condition, we tried to trigger some threat either to a motorist identity or to a parent identity. And then we asked participants for each of these vignettes to what extent they felt there was threat there and to what extent they might be prepared to change their behaviour in those kinds of circumstances. And we found quite a strong relationship between threatening identity and people's resistance to change. And that held even though we also allowed for how they habitually travelled and whether they had some intention to change at baseline, that they were originally thinking to change it before we measured their responses. So there is a relationship, is what we would suggest from those findings, between threatening identity and people's propensity to change towards more sustainable travel. So just trying to draw out the implications of the two studies, we think that this adds to the existing body of knowledge that links how we see ourselves and how prepared we are to enact sustainable behaviours. But it also suggests as well something of the complexity of behaviour in general, transport behaviour, that there are many factors that are at play as people make their travel more choices. In terms of implication for policy, we think that the theory suggests a few areas, I'll just mention three, that perhaps a note of caution is sound about the theory. The theory suggests that there are certain aspects of identity that we need to maintain for this coherent, happy, healthy identity. And that threat might result in resistance. Continuity is one of those. Now, continuity means that we need to feel that we're the same person we are now that we were last year, that we will be in the future. And a requirement to change, and change in itself, can be experienced as a threat to that continuity. A second factor is self-efficacy, and that's the idea that for a healthy self, we need to feel confident and in control of our environment to a reasonable extent. The suggestion there is that something that might undermine that, for example, enforced legislation, might be experienced as undermining that self-efficacy and therefore a threat. And a third aspect of identity is distinctiveness. And again, for a healthy self, there's a need to feel some form of value, uniqueness between yourself and others, something that marks you out in a way that you feel is valuable. And we can see that potentially some aspects of lifestyles, fast cars, expensive cars, for example, might be part of distinctiveness for some people. And then a suggestion that that might be taken away in a future scenario might be experienced as a threat to self. So the suggestion is that there are aspects of trying to encourage people to change which need to consider the effect on the identity of the individual. Because failure to understand how that might be experienced, and particularly if it might involve threatening the individual, might lead to more resistance to change rather than encouraging people to change. But rather than finishing only on a negative note of what we shouldn't do, I'd just like to sound a note of cautious optimism that the theory, as I mentioned, talked about not only deflective and denial processes, but also about acceptance processes. And there is the potential that identities do grow and develop, so there is the potential for threats to identity to encourage change in particular ways. And that is the next part of research that we're doing.